Samson was the individual who was God's one-man army against the nation of the Philistines. I was going to give you the alternate pronunciation, but now I can't think of it. Philistines, I guess it is. And it depends on what school of thought you come from as to how you pronounce it. But Samson was an incredible individual. And as you read through his life and you see some of the things that are depicted for him, it's very easy for us to see his imperfections and the mistakes that he made and the things that he did that were not in keeping with what the law was, what the law said, nor was it in keeping with the vow that he was to be under as a Nazarite. But he is directed by God and guided by God in the things that he does. Even the idea of becoming engaged to a woman who was not a Jewish woman was of the Lord, the book of Judges will tell us. And so God does all of this by design to use him as a one-man army against the entire Philistine nation. And his story is one that we all know and we've heard all of our lives. And it's one that's good for us to think about and to repeat from time to time. And so we'll do that tonight. And the account is in Judges chapter 13 through 16. We'll be telling the story. If you'd like to follow along and take a look at it, you can. Chapter 13 is a little bit interesting to me because there's a couple, married couple. They live in an area that if you were to come out of Jerusalem and you were to go toward the west, straight down the hill, the mountain, and heading down toward the Mediterranean Sea, you would come to the place and to the area where they lived and where Samson did most of his work. Even though they were of the tribe of Dan, and Dan's tribe was normally way to the north, this particular area where the Danites, or the tribe of some people from the tribe of Dan lived, were in this area, and this is where Samson lived and where he was born and where his mom and dad were. An angel appeared to the woman without the man being there. When the angel appeared to the woman, she told this woman, they were now quite a bit of age and had not had any children. And he told the woman that she was going to have a child and that she needed to make sure that she did not eat anything from the vine, no raisins, no grapes, no skin from grapes, and not to drink any wine and not to drink any strong drink, and not to eat anything unclean, and to make sure that when the boy was born that his hair was never cut, because he would be a Nazarite all of his life. A Nazarite is an individual who's taken a vow. Sometimes the vow can just be momentary. It can be just for a day or for a week or for a month or for a short period of time. But there are three that are mentioned to us in the Bible that were Nazarites for life. And Samson is one of them. John the Baptizer in the New Testament is another one. But they were Nazarites for life. They were that way from the time they were born, and they were that way until the day that they died. Samson was not entirely faithful to the vow. And we'll see why as we go through the story, and you may already be aware of it. But after the woman had had this message delivered to her by the angel, then the angel left. And she went and told her husband about the message she had seen or received from this man that was a man who appeared to be awesome. And she wondered if it might not be an angel that had appeared to her. So good, trusting husband, what he is, he falls to his knees and he says, God, let him come back and talk to me. And God listens to his request. And the man comes back. And when he does come back, the wife is in the field, and her husband's not with her again, and the man appears, and the wife runs and gets her husband. And he comes and sees the man that his wife has been talking about, and he says, are you the one that appeared to my wife? And he says, yes, I am. And he says to her, then what do we do about this boy? How do we raise him? And what do you want us to be like with him? And in essence, the angel says, everything I told her. I always thought that was funny. So why didn't you listen to her? Everything I told her is exactly what you're supposed to do. And he repeats it again and tells them. And so the boy is born. His hair's never cut. He's not eating anything unclean. Doesn't drink any wine. Doesn't drink any strong drink. And his mother didn't the entire time that she was carrying him. Isn't that an interesting thing about things we're discovering today about women who are pregnant and the impact that what they have and how they eat could have on the baby and the things that they do? And this was the account of what was given to us. So we come to chapter 14 and we have the story. Samson is of age now. And being of age, he has seen a woman in Timnah. She is a Gentile woman, a Philistine. And having seen this woman, he goes back to his father and he says to his father, that's who I want. I want you to get her for me. And his father is upset by the request. And his father says, aren't there plenty of women in our tribe or even among our people? Why do you want to go after her? And Samson says, she's what I want. I want you to get her for me. And the Bible will here say that they did not understand, at least his father did not understand. And I get the idea Samson wasn't concerned about it, but that this was of the Lord. He never does marry the woman, although they're engaged and they have a party. But the story begins to unfold. Samson's on his way one time to visit her and to court with her, I suppose, when a lion comes out after him. And when the lion comes out after him, he takes that lion and he rips him apart with his bare hands, just like you would rip apart a baby goat. I've never ripped apart a baby goat, so I don't understand the sensation and exactly what the ease of that would be or exactly how that's described. Sometime later, Samson goes back by that carcass of that lion he had killed and he walks over to it. And when he walks over to it, he notices that the bees are all around it. And inside the carcass of that lion, they have made their honey. And he dips his hands into the carcass of that lion and takes of that honey and eats of it. And then takes some of it to his mom and his dad, and they eat of it as well. And so now he's broken his Nazarite vow for the first time. Because the honey inside the carcass of the lion is unclean. Because the lion, dead body, is unclean. And he's now eaten something that is unclean. Doesn't dwell on that a lot. The story goes on and continues. But out of this event, he goes to the wedding party, which is the party that is had prior to the wedding, and it's going to last 7 days. And there have been guests that have come that evidently do not seem to be friends of Samson's. There's not a whole lot of friendship that we're introduced to with regard to Samson. He seems to be an individual who spends a lot of his time around the Philistines, a lot of his time around the women of Philistia and the individuals that they know, and really not many friends. And that's by design from God, I suppose. Because he is going to become this nation's absolute enemy because of all that he is going to do. But at the wedding party, he makes a challenge to the 30 guests that are there. And he tells them, I have a riddle for you. If you can solve my riddle in the 7 days of the feast, then I will get you 30 changes of garments. But if you can't solve the riddle in the 7 days of the feast, then you get me 30 changes of garments. And they are delighted to enter into the riddle. You get the idea, at least I do, kind of reading between the lines, there does not seem to be a lot of people as you read around Solomon, around Samson and the individuals who had interaction with him who think a whole lot of his intelligence. And they didn't seem to think they would have any trouble figuring out his riddle, whatever it was. So he tells them the riddle. Out of the eater came something to eat. And out of the strong came something sweet. So tell me my riddle. And they couldn't figure it out. And they got so frustrated with being able to figure it out, they went to his fiance. They went to his fiance and they said to her, "We're going to mistreat you and your family completely and badly if you don't help us find out what that riddle is." So she went to Samson and she began to beg. She began to beg by saying, "Why don't you tell me what it is?" And he said, "I haven't even told my parents. Why should I tell you? I'm not going to tell anybody what the riddle is." Well, now she goes from begging to nagging. And she nags for 7 days, for the entire length of the feast, until she wore him out. Didn't change his mind. Didn't call off the feast. Didn't say, "What have I gotten myself into?" But wore himself out, and he finally told her. So on the 7th day, the guys come in, and Samson is there, and they all have smiles on their faces. And they say, "What is it that's stronger than a lion, and what is it that's sweeter than honey?" And the favorite line of many people in all the book of Judges, Samson will look at them and say, "If you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you would not have known my riddle." And so he goes to a major city of the Philistines and he kills 30 people, evidently quite wealthy. And he takes the spoils of all that they have back with him and he gives each of the men at the party 30 changes of garments. And in his anger, he goes home. His future father-in-law decides that he's no longer interested in his daughter. And so he gives his daughter to the man who was going to serve as Samson's best man. Sometime later, Samson decides he's going to go back and claim his wife. And he comes back and the father won't let him in. "I didn't think you were interested anymore," he tells him. "I didn't think you wanted any more to do with her. So I have given her to your friend, to the man who was the best man." And Samson becomes so angry at what happened, he goes out and he catches either 300 foxes or 300 jackals. You almost have to have a cartoon to picture this. But he takes these 300, whatever they are, some translations will say foxes, some will say jackals, and some translations will give you a footnote and say it's one of the two. And I think the idea of leaning toward the jackals is that they would run in packs and be probably a little easier to catch. And he ties two of them's tails together and puts a torch in it, sets the torch on fire, and sends them loose. And they burn down the crops of the Philistines. They burn down their crops. They burn down their trees. They burn down all of the things that are around there. And the Philistines are up in arms. And they want to know who in the world did this. And they tell him that it was Samson who was supposed to be married to this girl. So they go to the girl's house. And they take her and his father-in-law. And they burn them to death. And when Samson hears about it, the Bible tells us that he ruthlessly engages in a great slaughter. We don't know how many, but he killed a lot of Philistines. And because he killed this great number of Philistines, the Philistines are absolutely at war with one man. And that one man is Samson. So all the Philistines gather together and they come to Judah. They come to the area of Judah that belongs to the nation of Israel and they are looking for Samson. And they threaten the people of Judah with war And the people of Judah agree to turn Samson over. So they go and they find Samson and they get him and they tell him what's going on and what's going to happen. And Samson says, you can take me. Just don't turn against me yourself. And they say, we will not. They tie him with ropes and they take him to the Philistines. And when he gets to the Philistines, the Bible says that the ropes binding him by his arms, because of his strength, are broken off as if they were nothing more than weeds that had burned up. They just melt out of his arms because of his strength. And he picks up the jawbone of a donkey that's laying nearby, and with the jawbone of that donkey, he kills 1,000 people. Philistines are furious. And they're doing everything that they can now in order to get rid of him. We come to chapter 16, which is the last chapter about Samson. He finds a harlot, a prostitute. He goes to her, and when word gets around among the Philistines that are in the area that he's gone into this harlot, they surround the place where he is, and they camp out all around it waiting for him to come out the next morning. And the Bible doesn't give us any clarity nor any details as to exactly what happened, and you can just almost let your imagination go as to what occurs. But what it does tell us is that Samson doesn't stay all night. He stays until midnight. And when he gets up and leaves the house at midnight, he comes to the gate and he pulls the whole thing up. The gate, the poles, and the bar. And he puts it on his back. And he walks and takes it to the Mount Hebron area, a distance of 40 miles. Nothing is said about all the guys that are hiding and waiting. And you don't know what happened to the guys that are hiding and waiting. In my mind, it may have worked out something like they were asleep, not expecting him until in the morning, and then they were awakened by this noise and they saw this man ripping this gate out of the ground with his bare hands and putting it on his back. And you can almost, if you were making the movie, see the whispers, there he is, go get him. You go first. I'll go right after you. I'm not any fool. You go first. And it's almost like he walks out with that gate on his back and nobody dares to lay a hand on him because of the great strength that he has. And then he meets Delilah. He falls in love with her. The Philistines find out about their relationship, and the Philistines come to her and say, each one of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver if you find out the key of his strength and turn him over to us. So Delilah begins the process. This is one of those places where I'm thinking about Samson. You know, you've been through this before. So what are you thinking? And what is going on in your head? And maybe Samson likes the idea of the game. But anyway, Delilah begins to beg him and pressure him and prod him to reveal to her the source of his strength. And evidently, this takes place over several days or over a period of time. And the first thing that he does when she begins to ask is to say that if I'm ever tied up with 7 undried cords, a cord like you would use on a bow, and one that's not been dried, if I were tied up with that, I would lose all my strength and I would not be able to do anything. So she ties him up with those cords and then shouts out, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. They're hiding in the next room. And he jumps up and he rips the cords. He's ready for battle. And she realizes that did nothing. Sometime later, she's come again. She's begging. And this time he says, if I'm tied up with 7 unused ropes. 7 ropes that have never been used. I will lose all of my strength and I will be as a normal man. So she ties him up with 7 unused ropes. You know, somewhere along the line, don't you get the idea? But as soon as he was tied up, she shouted and said, Samson, get up, they're upon you. And he jumped up and he ripped the ropes apart. And again, she was deceived. She gets even harder after him. And this time he says, if you take the 7 locks of my hair and weave it in a loom into the cloth, and then take a pin and put the pin through my hair and the cloth, I will lose all of my strength. So she does that. And when she's done that, she shouts to him, they're upon you, Samson. And he jumps up and he rips all of those stitches and everything out of his hair, and he's ready for battle, and nothing has any effect on his strength. And then she really gets angry. And finally he grows tired of it, and he tells her, and she realizes that he's opening her heart to her. Isn't that tragic? To open your heart someone who just wants to use it. But he opens his heart to her and he tells her, my hair has never been cut. I'm a Nazarite, taking a Nazarite vow. A Nazarite is not a Nazarene. Jesus was a Nazarene because he was from the city of Nazareth. Jesus never took a Nazarite vow. John the Baptizer did. He came neither eating nor drinking. And they said he was crazy. Jesus came both eating and drinking. And they said he's a wine bibber and a glutton. And Jesus said, but wisdom is known by its actions. Wisdom is known by what it does. Samson was a Nazarite because of a vow he had taken from his mother's womb. Jesus was a Nazarene because he came from the city of Nazareth. So she shaved his head, and his strength was gone, and he didn't know it. And she called for the Philistines and said, Samson, they're among you, they're on top of you. And they took him, and they captured him. They gouged his eyes out, and they took him to the prison, and they tied him to a gristmill stone and had him to walk around it like an oxen would and grind the grain. And then they had him to come to a party that they were hosting for their God so that they could make sport of him and watch him. Thing is, his hair had started growing back. And when he comes to that place, it's in a temple of Dagon, their god. There are 2 pillars that are in the middle, and he's standing beside them. And he asked the boy who's guiding him to make sure that you place me where the 2 center pillars are. And the boy does. He stands between these 2 pillars, and those 2 pillars support the entire area where this meeting place of all those who are worshipers of the Philistines is taking place. And then he asks God to grant him strength one more time. And he pushes the pillars down, and he destroys thousands of the Philistines. And he destroys more in his death than he did in his life. Interesting passage of Scripture, and one that kind of ties it all together, is chapter 16, verses 20 through 22. And in these verses, the Bible will tell us this about Samson. This is at the end of the thing with Delilah. She said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he woke from his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. Then the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes, and they brought him down to Gaza, bound him with bronze chains, and he was a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it was shaved off. The characteristic of us whenever we sin is just like it was when Samson did, and it's called blindness. And we are blind whenever all we see is what we see around us. And all we see are the things of this world. And we are blind when we forget about the one who made it all. And we stop looking at heaven. And we stop looking toward heavenly things. Whenever that occurs to us, we are blind. And Samson went blind because he stopped looking. And he was bound. He was bound by his enemies, and he was bound in a bronze chain, and he could not break himself free from it, just as sin binds all of us. We are either bound by sin or we're bound by Jesus. Either way, we're going to be bound. The Bible tells us you're the slave or in bondage to whomever it is that you serve. But look at the difference. Being bound to sin, being bound to the devil will say to us, you are worthless. You are nothing. You will never be any different. You will never be any better. You will never be worth anything. You will never deserve what God has for you. And God is lying to you. You're never going to get it anyway. But you are free to do whatever you want to do. So live for yourself. Do the things that you would like to do and enjoy the freedom that I give to you, because you can do anything you please. Whereas Jesus will say, you're made in the image of God. You're God's creation. You're the very reason I came to this world and died, because of my love for you. Because my Father and I desire to have you with us in heaven. And we desire for you to serve us, which is what you were created to be like us, be like our image. And being bound to us is not a tragic thing nor a hard thing. As a matter of fact, you will find that it will make your life the very best that it can possibly be. There is such a difference in the bondage of Jesus and the bondage of sin. And Samson now discovers the bondage of sin and of going his own way. There's a way back to God. There was even for Samson. His strength, you see, was not in his hair. It was in his trust in God. And so at the final end, he asked God, give me my strength one more time. He didn't ask God to give him his hair, even though it was growing back. He asked God to give him his strength one more time. And he did. And one more time he became God's servant in being the avenger for God against the enemies of God and of God's people. And he destroyed many. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. Our battle is against thoughts and ideas. And we need to be Samson's. We need to be people of strength and courage. We need to be people who are willing to stand alone and fight against the enemy, which are the thoughts and the ideas and the principles that the world lives by, and turn them back to God, and in the process make sure we're turning ourselves back to God. So it's no wonder the Bible in Acts chapter 11 will, in Hebrews chapter 11, will talk about Samson, one of the great men of faith. We can't wait till we get to heaven to where we can hear all of the great stories of faith from God's faithful people. Let's just make sure we're striving to be one of them. Living our lives for Him, being bound to Him, and being devoted to Him. If you need this evening to respond to the invitation of Jesus, either to become a Christian or to come home to Christ, we offer that invitation to you as together we stand and as we sing.